Hello, everyone, and welcome to Horrorspiria. My name is May, and today we have a very special episode. It's a theme chosen by a special guest, and I'm really excited to get into it with them. But first, let me go ahead and introduce them. Here is Josephine. Hi, Josephine.
Hi, I'm excited to be on the podcast.
Yeah, you look awesome. We're going to post a video, but I love your hair. Your hair color is amazing. I just have to say that right off the bat.
I appreciate that. I do it myself, so thank you.
Looking chic and awesome. Well, today our episode was curated by you, and I'm so excited. Technically, you finally have... ordained, that's not the word, I don't know words right now, but you have ordained us with the namesake of this podcast. You know, I got the name of the podcast from Suspiria, which is my favorite horror movie, but we have never done an episode on Suspiria, so I'm really excited to talk about it with you today. But the theme for today is, I think the way that you phrased it was dance in horror films. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, very good. And I am obsessed with this because I love dance. When I did my master's, it was a master's of fine arts, so I had to do a feature film, and I did an experimental narrative on the experience of depression as a young woman. And one way to do that was, one of my best friends was a choreographer, and I literally paid her to do like four different choreographed sequences that were more like horror. Like, they definitely came from this like horror aesthetic influence for me. So when you said dance in horror films, I was like, so excited. So maybe do you mind talking a little bit about this inspiration for you? Like, where did it come from?
Sure. So I grew up wanting to be a ballerina. I think like a lot of, you know, AFAB kids did. I loved Angelina Ballerina as a kid, and my parents would not let me sign up for classes. I think they didn't want me. It was very important to them that I didn't have like body image issues growing up. Like, they were very careful to give me like gender neutral clothing. I wasn't allowed to watch certain like Disney movies that were about princes saving people or like enforcing gender norms or very thin princesses.
Well, that's good.
It was. In high school, I did start dancing. I have like a very basic education in dance, and I still do it occasionally, but, as I got into like middle and high school, I started to think about whether I wanted to pursue ballet, as a slightly more mature child. And, I started immediately running into all of the, not only the body issues, that ballet kind of enforces on people, but also, the extreme body horror established. I had a friend whose mother had been a ballerina, and she used to show us her pointe shoes with the blood inside.
Oh God. Yeah. No.
Yeah. So that kind of changed my relationship to dance altogether and like pursuing it in a serious way. And then I saw Suspiria on like a 12-part YouTube upload in college at some point. Like, I came home after the bars, like, was just settling in for a movie, and someone had illegally uploaded it. And so I watched it in like probably out of order.
Yeah. People don't understand what it was like. It was like before 2010. I was explaining to this someone when we were talking about Japanese horror. I don't know if you remember this, but even before YouTube, like, there were those very weird streaming sites that like would curate these like Daily Motion and things like that, where you had to like watch these underground films broken up into parts. People don't realize how wild early streaming was.
And it was so formative to me. Like, I still chase that experience. I watched Mika Ninagawa's Helter Skelter, which is about modeling. It's a Japanese film about modeling. Okay. I watched it as an illegal upload with German subtitles on archive.org.
Yeah.
Like a couple of years ago. And I was like, okay, I could go find this movie, but I'd rather just, you know, I bought it too. Cause I want to throw that money her way. But that experience, watching it that way and like alone in my room at like 2 a.m., you know, in college.
Yeah.
The colors drew me in, but also Suspiria is such a, a German folklore inspired, infused story. Yeah. My grandmother's German. I'm trying to learn how to speak. She's fluent, and I'm like, I've been trying to learn how to speak for years, but it's like that immediately drew me in, the idea of ballet as this mode of exploring these very kind of feminine subjects, like fairy tales and ballet, I think are really pushed towards girls. And they don't have to be, but they tend to be. And I loved the infusion of that. I know Argento, we can talk about this, doesn't use ballet as much as the other version of Suspiria. But, you know, I love their little jackets and, you know, her like, you know, trying to do the exercises and like wavering around.
I think Suspiria is just one of the reasons it's remained my favorites is it's just one of the most beautifully designed horror films of all time. It's just, you know, even the inspiration of the colors sometimes isn't even motivated, but you don't care because it's just like this kaleidoscope of color and limbs and blood. And yeah, though, you're absolutely right. One thing that I was going to bring up is, for being a movie about dance, the first Suspiria has like no dancing in it.
Yeah, I think the only scene is when she is kind of thrown into the main character is thrown into the exercises and then like basically faints. Which was my experience the first time our teacher, I had learned hip hop and modern dance before starting on ballet basics, which is kind of backwards, but they all of a sudden my teacher was like, one day we had a substitute dance teacher and she was like, we're going to do ballet exercises. And they were like leaps. So it's where you like, you know, go across the floor and then you leap in the middle. And we had to do those over and over again in lines for like an hour and a half. And I felt, you know, I felt what she was, what Susie Bannion was feeling.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, no. Dance in and of itself, people don't realize, well, I don't want to say people don't realize because obviously I think a lot of people do realize, but it, for what it does to your body and the way that it is associated with such grace, especially ballet, there is a really large body horror aspect to it if you commit to it. And it does, it, you know, it is something that you would feel like should be explored a bit more in genre. And so these choices are really interesting. Another one that came to mind when we were planning this was like Black Swan. I know not many people think Black Swan's a horror, but I think it should definitely count as one considering the lengths it goes to. So that's really interesting. I'm really excited to get into it with you. Now, before we go even further, I would love if you would tell people a little bit more about you. So like, you know, what do you do? We met because I was taking part of the Slasher Studies Conference online last year, and I don't think I've ever told you this. You did one of the kindest things that I think anyone has ever done for me, where you were like live tweeting my talk, but like not only were you live tweeting it, you were like really engaging with it. And I never get experiences like that. So like as soon as I saw your thread, I like followed you. And ever since, I mean, I love your Twitter account. It's amazing. But, you know, you do a lot other than just tweet really great. So tell us a little bit more about you, please.
I appreciate you saying that. Thank you. I do also want to mention, I think you had a comment. I don't know if this is embarrassing or not, but I think when your talk came up, you had a comment in the beginning where you said something like, oh, I don't have as many accolades as everyone else or something like that. Because everyone at that conference was like a double doctorate. So my background, I failed out of two bachelor programs. I have a degree now, but I was never able to pursue my master's or generous for several reasons. I failed out of two bachelor programs. I don't have very many academic credits to my name. And so it's always difficult for me to like engage in those spaces because I don't feel like I belong. You know, I've published and things like that, but I've had to like publish on the back end. Like usually I knew the editor was able to kind of slip in under the radar because I don't have a master's or like any associations. I do now. So I just started a new job. I work in a publishing department of a museum.
Amazing.
I tend to keep that kind of separate from my other stuff, but it's been an awesome job. I am in charge of rights and reproductions. So I do a photo editing type duties where I'm like finding photos, making sure we can use them, etc. So that's fantastic.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
It's a lot of work. They keep me very busy, which is good, but I don't think I was expecting how busy I am every single day. But it is fun. So I have a background in art. I do some photography. I used to do metal art, so like mostly with recycled objects. And then I'm primarily a writer. I published a book in 2016 called A Coven in Essex County, which is about, it's a prequel to Lovecraft's Innsmouth that challenges his shadow over Innsmouth,
Amazing.
His, ideas, especially about gender and roles and things like that.
Yeah.
And then I have a published story called Korka Rusolka that's about a Polish folklore. It's folk horror.
Yeah.
And then I do a lot of film criticism kind of on the side. Yeah. So.
That's amazing. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And I'm really, I love you keep me informed with so many things going on in the world. So I always really appreciate, I love your Batman animated series thread, because I actually was doing the same last year, but I gave up halfway through. But I loved how serious you took those plots, because I have a lot of the same thoughts about the Poison Ivy storyline. We won't get too much into it now, but yeah, I think I love when people are unafraid to put their reviews or criticisms online. So I love what you do. Right. So maybe to begin to transition back to our topic, horror films, right? What makes them so special for you?
I was a kid who grew up terrified of horror films and would not watch them.
Amazing.
until I was 17, 18, I really didn't.
Oh, wow.
Not even kid horror. Goosebumps was, I tried reading it and was terrified.
Oh, that is so funny.
Yeah. So I'm a latecomer to horror. I don't know. Something changed. I have some traumatic experiences in early adulthood that I was into horror right before that. And I think it just kind of bonded for me. I know trauma is kind of an entry point for a lot of people into horror.
Yeah,
and we're talking about that and studying that more and more. Yeah. But I think that for me, it was discovering international cinema. I know I'm American. I grew up in the Midwest. I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and we have a small film culture that was just kind of exploding around the time I was in high school. Awesome. And all of a sudden, all these theaters started getting all these international things. And then our library system got an influx of international DVDs. Nice. And I started watching Japanese horror. And that was just the moment. Yeah, it was I look at American horror films that were coming out at, in the 90s through 2000s, and there's some good stuff, but it was not connecting to me because it wasn't from the perspectives I was interested in. It wasn't dealing with topics I liked. And all of a sudden I realized, oh, there's literally a whole planet of horror.
What are some of your favorites from that time?
I mean, Audition, I think it's a little later, but that's probably
99.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever see Happiness of the Katakuris?
Yes.
That is one of my absolute favorite, sort of talking about music and dance and horror, right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Very cool. So getting more on top of the topic. So these three films, why these three films? What made them stick out for you?
Sure. I mean, The Red Shoes, I saw a couple of years ago, and it is such this was another one. It's not a horror film, but it is such a horrifying employee relationship. It's, manipulation, these two men fighting over this woman who's just trying to do her thing.
It's very expressionistic. And, that's the basis of horror. I think it could definitely be called a horror,
I don't know if this is even an argument, but the story that it's based on, both Suspiria and Red Shoes have a folklore fairy tale background.
Yeah.
The Red Shoes is probably my favorite fairy tale. And the one that's written by Hans Christian Andersen is to me very corny. And it ends with an angel saving her, ascending her to heaven in the end. And the version that I heard when I was a kid is the German version, which is ends very bloodily with somebody's feet cut off and she dies. She bleeds out.
Yeah.
And I didn't love horror movies as a kid, but horror fairy tales, if there was a nice princess and then something horrible happened, I was into it. I don't know what the root of that was, but The Red Shoes is super interesting to me. And I love Suspiria Suspiria, the first film is fantastic. The second one, like the newer one, the 2018, which apparently isn't a remake, an homage, it frustrates me. It was good, but it frustrates me. I just want, I'm so interested in witch movies, but I'm just so tired of like cis men making them at this point.
So when you told me, yeah, let's watch both Suspirias, I literally had to like heavy sigh because I was like, I don't want to revisit the new one because I fell asleep. And then like I woke up in the middle and then I was like, Suspiria is my favorite movie. Even, yeah, whatever this version is, I shouldn't want to fall asleep during it. So, but I was like, you know what? Maybe I did too much drugs or something, like let me go back to this. So I genuinely gave this new one a shot two times this week and I fell asleep both times. Eventually I think I saw all of it, but I was like, yeah, okay, I've seen enough, we can talk about it, Josephine can help out with it. But yeah, no, it super frustrates me and I absolutely agree with that as well. I'm like, if there needed to be a new version, it shouldn't have been directed by Luca Guadagnino, of all people, who, like, defends Woody Allen and thinks that, like, I don't think he likes women, period.
It was written by David Kaganich. Sorry, I'm, like, terrible at pronunciations today. And it's, like a Slavic name. I should be able to do it. But, So it was written by him and he wanted like a female choreographer to do the dance sequences. I was doing my research this week and he had like told Luca, like, I want a female choreographer. I don't want any movements in this film that weren't created by a woman. Yeah. And Luca was like, no, and handpicked this. And we can talk about, I'm in the new movie, I'm focusing on like my research that I did this week was focusing on like the dance inspirations, which were all real, absolutely, like German dance inspirations. But it's so frustrating to read about it because it's like this movie at so many points could have been this like amazing collaboration between, you know, if it had to be Luca, somebody else. And I think Luca picked up the rights to this from someone else, if I remember correctly. So like this movie was going to be made by somebody else. And then that fell through and he was like, oop, it's mine now.
I think it's so ugly. I think the only interesting part, I was awake during one of these parts, is like way towards the end. The dance corpse witch dance red, okay, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, that looks it, but it's also just like it, whatever. Yeah, okay, so specific, you were very interested in the way that dance is utilized specifically, I guess, like what interests you about the way that dance is utilized in these three films?
So the Red Shoes is a very, very ballet movie. I think more than the other two. Like it's straight up. They have a ballet sequence in the middle.
I love it. It's like 20, 30 minutes of just dance and expressionist visuals and colors. And it's really nice.
And barely any like actual narrative. I mean, it's like, it's the narrative is, you know, mirroring what's happening in the film, sort of, but it's, you know, mostly just about the dance. The Red Shoes is fascinating. All three of them are fascinating from a ballet perspective, but the Red Shoes cast Moira Shearer, as Vicky Page, the main ballerina. And from my understanding, this film like changed the trajectory of her career for the worse.
Really?
Yeah. So in the Red Shoes, Lermontov is this like ballet impresario, and he's based on a real life guy, but he like the story that it's based on isn't like as scary and awful as a movie. And in real life, Emmerich Pressburger kind of became this character Lermontov, and he chased Moira Shearer for a year after she said, no, I'm not going to do this. Until her like prima ballerina, the person who was training her, was like, I'm sick of this. Like, just say yes to him because she can't keep showing up to our performances. So to me, it's like this movie is horrifying on every level. And that's, I mean, it's dark, but it's interesting to me because it's considered like this absolute masterpiece of Technicolor.
Right.
And I mean, the colors for like comparing it to Suspiria, it's not the same color scheme, obviously, but color is so important to this one.
Yes.
And Suspiria, I mean, Suspiria to me is like ostensibly about ballet, like a ballet movie, but it's not, you know, it's about everything else, which is it was, I don't really understand why Argento chose ballet. It was just such a strange thing to me. I do think, again, that connection between folklore and fairy tales and ballet and being kind of the domain of little girls in a lot of ways, and then maturing that, is very interesting. And the new one is actually, the 2018 Suspiria is fascinating because of the German expressionist dance influences.
Yeah.
But that's about all that I found fascinating in that movie.
Yeah. To give a little bit more context-ish to both versions of Suspiria, it is technically also the first entry into a trilogy, right? Have you seen the trilogy?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Mother of Tears is just one of the most insane ass films of all. And I love it so much. But yeah, it's this idea that it's the three mothers, right? These witches that have like these three covens. And there's also like this folklore about like there's a head witch, right? And all of the witches serve in servants to her. I mean, very interesting as well, because and you can correct me if I'm wrong because I'm no expert, but also in ballet there's like the head ballerina, right? And all of the ballet and all of the ballerinas sort of like fall around her, right? Or follow her. Yeah. So really interesting parallels there between the very nature of ballet and then this idea of like a hierarchical witch coven folklore, right? What do you make of like this dichotomy, right? This like very macabre dichotomy with this very beautiful sort of thing. Like, do you think that dichotomy adds to the nature of these films?
When I think about the use of ballet, like Suspiria is even 1977 is a hard one to fold into this because the like extreme physicality of ballet doesn't come through in that one necessarily.
Yeah.
I mean, there are physical scenes. I think in the 1977 one is where a woman literally falls into barbed wire.
Yeah.
Right. That's,
yeah.
So that was an excellent scene, like horrifying, awful, excellent.
Yeah.
I think 2018 Suspiria really hams that up to like an extreme.
Yeah. One scene that always sticks out to me in the new one, and you'll have to help me out because I only remember this in Fever Dreams, but it's like when one of the teachers, she's doing a dance alone in the room and her limbs, her joints start to break down.
Yeah, I think that's Helga. God, I am like the worst with these people's names. but yeah, it's actually it is a student that, and that's actually a great scene. I'm glad you brought that up. It's actually a student who Susie is basically going to replace, Dakota Johnson's character.
Yeah.
And they are taking her ability to do jumps.
Yeah.
And one thing I wanted to touch on is, you know, they're stealing this, physically stealing this woman's ability to do jumps and transferring it to Susie. Yeah. And later you found out that they like kept her alive and like twisted for, you know, the entirety of the film. But the dance that they are ostensibly training for is actually Les Medusées, which is the dance in the film is called Volk, but it's a real dance that was created by Jalet, who's the choreographer for this film. And she's supposed to be training for this very specific, very famous dance that was performed in the Louvre in real life, but it's very, very earthbound. Like they're stealing this woman's, you know, they're doing this horrifying body horror scene where they're stealing her ability to jump. But in the actual performance, she doesn't really do very many jumps. Like it's very that, and then there's also a lot of influence by Mary Wigman's Hexenton, witch dance, and all both of those are like completely on the ground. So I don't even understand, like that scene was so interesting and so gross and like very good body horror, but it doesn't actually play into the plot or like the point they're making at all.
Yeah, you know, you made me think more about this idea of like the genesis between both Suspirias, and I think, you know, the idea of femininity was very central to the, I mean, there's barely a man, right, in the original Suspiria. And, you know, Argento also, like, deeply believes in witches and like took this synopsis very seriously and also co-wrote and developed this film with a woman, with Daria Nicolodi. I'm probably saying that wrong, but but with the new Suspiria. So I did a quick fact check, and you're absolutely right. Originally, David Gordon Green was supposed to do the remake, which should have been. So he said, I have a quote from him. He said that he was a huge fan of the original film, and that he, quote, "I love Argento's film, and we wrote a very faithful, extremely elegant opera. I don't mean musical opera, but it would be incredibly heightened music and heightened and very operatic and elegant sets," end quote. I'm so mad that that didn't happen. And apparently Luca directly appealed to Dario and Daria to make the film, which is hilarious because I don't know if you know this, you probably do, but Dario detests the new Suspiria. He thinks it's like shit ass awful, and that he said, I think he said something like Luca had no idea what he was making and he doesn't consider the new Suspiria a form of Suspiria at all. And I think it's because a lot of that understanding of the femininity, and as you said there, I mean, there doesn't even seem to be a female creative attached to all of the above the line behind the scenes credits, and I think it shows. And that example that you gave about the body horror, but how the stakes of the very body horror don't translate due to the very lore that the film is trying to carry out. Like you say, it's very frustrating, right?
Yeah, and it shows a real disconnect between even the fact that Luca saw La Meduse, Jallet, which was Jallet's ballet at the Louvre. Uh-huh. And was like, that was a lot of very similar sounding syllables, but he saw it and was like, this is who I want. And yeah. In the meantime, his writer was writing a script that was meant to be very collaborative with a woman choreographer. And he had like left parts and kind of briefly described and kind of filled in like, okay, we're going to have like, you know, whoever it is, fill in here. And then Luca was just like, nope, I'm bringing in this choreographer. This choreographer ostensibly had never met the writer. And now they're supposed to create this film together. And it's so frustrating collaborative process cut down.
Yeah, and he says that Suspiria is his most personal film. Like, bitch, what?
Whose experience? I mean, I don't know if Luca's going to tell us something in the future, but like, who's... Yeah. This is, have you seen the movie Hagazusa, which is a German...
Oh, no, but I've heard of it. Yes, yes, yes.
So it's a German witch movie by another dude, and he's like a German dude. Yeah. And he was like, he also said, this is a very personal movie. And it's apparently about how his mother like believed in witches as a kid and told him this story. And throughout the film, the main character who's a witch gets like raped a whole bunch and like just abused. Why? And like, it's terrible. And then she does a bunch of drugs and kills a baby. It's like, sorry to spoil it, but like, it's awful.
Oh, that
yeah. So it's like, I'm sick of these, like, okay, my grandmother's German. Suspiria, the original film, was set in the Black Forest, which is where my family is partially from. Yes. And we aren't like super keyed into the pagan side of our family, but that's still there. And I still wouldn't make a movie, even as like a femme, that's like, this is my personal experience about me growing up. I don't know, like, did Luca grow up in a small town in Iowa in like a Mennonite, faction? Like, what is he talking about?
Well, you know, one thing that we keep like bringing up is this German side, right? Both of these are set in Berlin. Now, one thing that I do think is a bit more grounded in the new film is the fact that it occurs still in 1977 Berlin, which is interesting, right? Like, he didn't necessarily update it, but he really seems to want to foreground it in the divided nature of, like, you know, politics and nationalism are very embedded into the new version, whereas that wasn't involved at all. I mean, one thing for those that may not have seen both films or know this, the original Suspiria is 70 minutes long. The new one is literally 2 hours and 40 minutes. So like it's bloated with a lot of other things. Do you think I think the only word coming to mind is like sensationalization. Do you think the sensationalization of setting works more in the new Suspiria? Or is it like another distraction, or can we talk maybe a little bit about that?
So I found the politics in the new Suspiria fascinating. I know that Kaganich, when he was writing the script, did a lot of work researching the period and researching art from the period and politics. And Jallet did a ton, especially pulling from German choreographers. I actually pulled this quote up earlier. Mary Wigman had a piece called Hex and Taunts, which I think I referenced earlier, that is a very clear reference point for the movie. It's about, she was a very famous German modern dancer. And Joseph Goebbels saw a performance of hers and said, "Dance must be cheerful and show beautiful female bodies and have nothing to do with philosophy." And then released the rules about like what German art can be.
Yeah.
So the idea of the dance in this film and Tilda Swinton's character as Blanc, as Madame Blanc, has a fantastic line that I'm not quite remembering to Dakota Johnson's character, where she says, you know, this dance came out of a very important period that if you weren't here, you probably don't understand it. And right. It was about going against the state and existing as not only women, but also just this art that shouldn't have been state, you know, controlled by the Nazis, essentially, is what she's talking about. And then later, the invaders. So it's, I think the politics of this film are fascinating. I wish that they had brought in a German creator of any, you know, because I don't think any, Jallet is definitely not German. Luca is definitely not German. Kaganich, I assume, isn't, but I don't know what his background is. It's frustrating to me because it's like, they did do all these reference points and they didn't even film it in Germany. I'm pretty sure they filmed it in Italy.
Yeah.
So it was just like, I love that they included that, but as someone, my family was here in like the 1910s, like in the United States. So we weren't there for this long period of history, but I do have like, you know, extended relatives that were there. And there's such complicated things going on there that I wish we had had a German perspective on it.
No. Yeah. Have you been to Germany?
No, not yet.
I just went this past year and I mean, I love Germany. I love German culture. I speak German. It's just one of these things that have always fascinated me. But I can't agree more, because when I went to Germany, you know, sounding like an ignorant American, I remember when I got off of the plane to Berlin, I'm about to tell on myself, but I was like, it's not shiny here. I was like, why was I expecting Vegas? And so then like after a few days, you know, of like walking around and whatnot, I was like, oh, wow. Division is still like very much embedded in the culture here. And I mean, to be fair, like, of course it is. I mean, technically, that was only about like 40 years ago, which isn't that long in modern history at all. But also like, one thing that a lot of my friends were explaining to me is it's not like there was reintegration. It was more like Western Germany took over Eastern Germany and would sometimes even just stay out of certain pockets of Eastern Germany. And like you see it in the architecture, you see it in the culture and social relations. And I agree with you completely. I think, you know, I think it's obviously there's a lot more talk about this when there's more like cross-cultural appropriation along racial lines. But like, I also had this feeling about things like Midsommar, where it's like, you know, these white folks taking on European cultural concepts and sort of like bastardizing them and being like, yeah, well, you know, it's a new thing. And it's like, yeah, but like, why not actually involve people of that culture to actually make it, you know, more authentic, more interesting, because they have unique perspectives too, and they deserve to be represented rather than, you know, this imperial American, even though, you know, Luca's Italian, but this, I think, especially with American filmmakers, this is common, this imperial American impulse just to be like, well, we can do a version of it and it'll be a hit. Yeah, it'll be a hit, but like, so what, you know? I hate it personally.
Yeah. And I thought also, in Suspiria in particular, they kind of dance around. I know it wasn't about like Nazism and not everything has to be about Nazism, but they just kind of dance around, like, because some of what they're talking about is, you know, the history of Nazism in that city. Right. And I wish like a German filmmaker, I think, would have handled it differently and maybe been a little more like, German identity is so complicated. I'm half Polish, so like, talk about like,
oh, amazing
complicated, you know.
Yeah.
But it's just like, it's so complicated, and the relationship to that is so interesting but also very firm. Like, they're, you know, they will talk about it, it's not like they don't teach it, you know. So the way they danced around it was just a little bizarre, and like the histories of it, especially making the psychologist, psychiatrist, whatever, more of a character, and having his whole backstory with his wife disappearing,
right?
You know, why did she disappear, what was going on, you know, like, there,
and that weird epilogue too.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Especially there's the line in that film where he gets accused of having told Chloe Moretz's character how she was feeling and that she was crazy. And then they like completely redeem him and give him this like kind of out. And it was so bizarre. So bizarre to me.
It is bizarre.
Even though he's played by Tilda Swinton. But
which, you know, props to Tilda Swinton for that. Maybe I may have asked like a version of this, but maybe let me be more direct. What do you think are like the most horrifying aspects of these films? Do you think they have to deal with the dance themselves, or is it different? Let's talk maybe a little bit about that.
Certainly. Well, since we're kind of on the new one, I think the new Suspiria, the body horror, is just exquisite. Like, I wish it had been more directly related to what was actually happening narratively on screen. But amazing, scary. I rewatched that film in preparation for this, and I could not like keep my eyes on the screen during the scene with like the twisting bodies and the layer, the hooks. They added the hooks in this version. bizarre, but like, you know, fantastically done though. Like, fantastic, very scary. I wish that that had been folded in more directly, because I think the film overall would have been more successful, more interesting. The original one, I mean, all the facial expressions. I know there's like a lot of scary stuff happening in that film, but there's a lot of like clutching the wall and like, you know, abject horror. And it's effective. And I mean, Goblin soundtrack, like.
Oh, yeah. I was actually going to ask, because I don't know how I feel about this. Who do you think has a better score for the Suspirias?
The new one is good for like, I think it fits the film very well.
It
like,
does
it's very
fit
interesting.
The film.
Does fit the film. But I forgot, shame on me, I forgot how good the 1977 one is.
It's so iconic. Like, you could just put it on disco ball, be like, call up the dealers, be like, let's go. I love the original one so much, but I actually own, this is a surprise, but I own the new one on vinyl. It's like bubblegum pink, but it's a different mood. I mean, it's definitely somber. I feel like the new Suspiria is just like also such a drag, whereas I feel like the first one is, I mean, I put it on, I'm happy, but I don't know.
I think you're right. I'm ready to like, I like when the 1977 one, I'm ready to like remember like being high at my first metal show. Like, I know it's not metal, but you know, I'm like getting those vibes. I'm like, yes, like, this is, you know, I can feel the bass and the you know, in the room. And then the red shoes, as far as horror, I mean, the relationships in that are horrifying, all of it.
I mean, like, the ending, right?
I hate that she, like, I think it's more horrifying that she like wasn't dead, because she jumps to her death because she can't handle being torn between her wants and these two men. And then her husband is like, oh, it's okay. Like, you know, it's okay if you choose me, it's fine. And she's like, okay. And she's gory and bloody. I don't know that.
She's bleeding to death on a stretcher.
Yeah. You know? The whole, like, the relationships in that film. But to me, if her husband is like just as horrifying a person as Lermontov.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely feel like The Red Shoes is about like owning women, you know, and owning their power.
Whereas, in different ways too, sexually versus their, because I don't believe that Lermontov was like actually romantically attached to her. If he was, he didn't believe that. So yeah, like the, her labor, you know, to get like leftist about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Whereas even with the new Suspiria, which I dislike, you know, I can definitely see where it's more, I mean, it's more about all of these different versions of femininity, right? Both of those versions and these competing versions of women and the ultimate mother, right? Which in and of itself is like really interesting. Now, I wanted to ask about, so like for you, the thing that was tying these three films together was the very specific form of ballet, right?
Yes. And the kind of the fairy tale references.
Yeah.
I guess the new one, not so much, but you know.
Yeah, no, fair. Yeah, fair enough. But so that reminds me, it makes me want to think of like other things with genre and ballet. And I was actually thinking of like genre and dance and something that came up. Well, first off, I love Jessica Harper, mainly because of Suspiria. But have you ever seen Phantom of the Paradise?
Yes.
Yeah, I love her in that. I absolutely love her in that. So I was thinking of things like that. But, you know, speaking of ballet and genre, my favorite movie is Donnie Darko. And, you know, how Sparkle Motion, right, is incorporated into that. But like the idea of ballet to me is like very fantastical and very feminine. But it's also just like hard to even incorporate into films, I feel, because it is so specialized, right? And films are known for like really long hours and whatnot. And I imagine it's just like very physically demanding to try and coordinate talent at that level for things like that. I was just trying to think of other like little dichotomies. It's something that I wish was played around with more, especially because, I mean, I just think it's so beautiful to like dance amidst these very macabre images. I don't know. I guess that's my intersection that I'm interested in.
I love that. And actually, this is a kind of a nice tie into another piece of politics I meant to talk about with the new Suspiria. But so in The Red Shoes, when they introduce Vicky Page, she's going to be this amazing new ballerina. She's on her way to being prima ballerina, so the top ballerina. Yeah. Yeah. They put on a production of Giselle, which is a ballet I'm obsessed with.
Awesome.
I made an argument in a horror magazine that has since gone out of print. I'm going to be posting that essay this week, but it's about Giselle as a slasher. The story opens with a bunch of teenagers making out, partying. Somebody falls in love, gets hurt, kills herself. And she comes back as a ghost and then dances all these men to death.
Awesome.
So fantastic. Very ghostly. I mean, the whole play, the pinnacle of it are at least a dozen ballerinas in veils and these full white tutus doing the same movements and then killing these men. So it's a fantastic piece of horror that is, I believe it's the only romantic ballet that's still performed. Awesome. And I saw it at the Joffrey Ballet here, but it shows up in The Red Shoes, and it's a French ballet, I believe. Somebody's going to correct me at some point, but this very classical ballet. And in the new Suspiria, they are talking about German expressionist dance. Like, you really don't get a classical ballet feel at all.
Right.
And it's weird to me because Madame Blanc, and German expressionist ballet was really pushing away from the French schooling and the idea that France was the pinnacle of ballet.
Right.
And that we should be having these very narrative, very beautiful, very fantastical ballets.
Right.
But in the film, when Madame Blanc is having her very like lesbian relationship with Susie, they start speaking in French, I'm pretty sure. And it was such a weird departure to me. I know that Blanc, I think she's supposed to be French. I'm not really sure, but it was such a weird way to like, include this like random, like, okay, well, ballet is French, so we're going to speak in French, but it was this very, supposed to be this very German expression of the dance form. So I was, it was such a weird, like, little piece of politics that seemed out of place, and seemed like if they had brought on, you know, someone else, they would have been able to, like, maybe we shouldn't have them speak French. Like, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, no. Color me unsurprised, I guess. So actually, when you were talking about Giselle, that reminds me of something I wanted to ask you is, do you feel like there are any ballets that could count as horror?
Oh my God, there is. I'm trying to remember who it is. There is someone who I am associated with, who I know, who is doing like goth ballet as her thesis. Like,
oh, gothic amazing ballet. I love it.
Yeah, I'll try to find her. I'll try to figure out which person that is. I don't want to guess, but right now. But so gothic ballet is definitely, like, as in gothic stories that have horror elements. I think Giselle, I read as a straight horror. I think there is, I mean, the Milwaukee Ballet a couple of years ago did Dracula ballet.
Amazing. Okay. Yeah.
So ballet, like, adaptations of movies and books are very popular right now. It's a big thing. I don't love those. I think Dracula is fantastic, but I don't, like, right now the Joffrey is doing, like, Of Mice and Men, and I don't really have interest in seeing that as a dance. Sorry, Joffrey. But but yeah, there are certainly ballets. I mean, Giselle is, like, the big one. That's the one I've studied the most. I would love to dig into it more, but definitely there's ballet turning in, like, the 19th century into being about folklore and fairy tales. They certainly went for the creepier ones because I think they fit with the traditional tutu a little bit more. You get a lot of ghosts, a lot of sylphs, a lot of women, like, telling men to come here and then offing them. So a lot of, like, the monstrous feminine, really.
Hell yeah. Yeah, I love that. Yeah, no, I absolutely love that. I mean, I don't think the Red Shoes would count as monstrous feminine, but definitely Suspiria does.
Yeah, I think Maitland McDow makes that argument in a book or something I read this week.
Really nice. Okay, I'll have to go find it. Right. So a few things. I want to mention, or I want to ask one thing about, or an opinion or whatnot. Do you have, like, an idea as to, like, for a film, and probably a horror film, but it doesn't necessarily have to be a horror film. Like, do you ever have an idea as to how, like, genre and ballet could be fused in a hypothetical film? Like, do you have any wide wishes for things like this?
I want to see... I will say I'm a little bit biased because there's a film coming. There's a documentary coming out that's about the body horror in ballet.
Ooh, really?
I wish I should have, like, prepared all of these, like, references.
I want to see that.
I think it's going to be on Shudder, I assume. Okay. But so, like, I want to see a film that deals with the extreme body horror and the way that Black Swan sort of did. I mean, a lot of it was, like, her self-inflicted. I don't think it deals as directly with how challenging
I remember the scene in the bathtub, right? Where she's, like, pulling. Oh,
yeah. So that was gross. But, like, the dance form itself is incredibly painful, especially for female ballerinas. And I want something that incorporates that, but gets into, like, the dreamlike sequences of the Red Shoes. Because I really do think that ballet and the history of it as a romantic genre or something, as in, like, the time period, it really took a turn in the romantic era and turned into something new and something different and kind of hasn't left that. And I would love to see something that incorporates, like, you know, the feeling of the original Suspiria, but with these dreamlike sequences that very directly relate to ballet itself. You know, and not just, like, as a dressing, like, actually about the core of the challenges. And I also, I was going to mention, there's a huge reckoning right now in the ballet world of women coming forward, primarily women, about widespread sexual abuse and, like, grooming and targeting of young ballerinas in particular. And that's another reason Suspiria 2018 makes me so angry, because if they had brought on, you know, a woman choreographer, it would have, you know, brought some presence to that movement, I think. And I would love to see a film that kind of deals directly with that as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot to be. I am reading. I've been very slowly reading a book called The House on the Lagoon that deals with like this grooming of, trained ballerina instructors and, very young, because ideally ballerinas, they have to start very young. And, it's a lot of training, a lot of pain, as you say. And yeah, I always, like I say, I always kind of like want like this big, beautiful. It could be like a very poetic, as you said, very dreamy kind of like. I also totally agree with you. Like the folkloric aspects related to ballet culture also make it so timeless in many different ways. And there's so many different folklores you could experiment with. So many different incorporations of dance as well, combined with ballet. So yeah, I agree with you. Well, hopefully we'll pitch something one day. One thing I wanted to mention that we spoke about very briefly, mainly because I was confused, but the first Red Shoes that I saw was a Korean film. I saw it before YouTube. I used to watch films on AsianHorrorMovies.com, and The Red Shoes was one of them. It came out in 2005, and I actually strongly recommend it. I don't think it's necessarily as poetic as any of these three films. Even New Suspiria, I can tell, was trying to do the whole, like I said, there's like a 7-minute sequence where there's just titties dancing and red cloth everywhere. But it is still really beautiful, but it definitely does like embody the very horror of the original fairy tale. Like these shoes keep getting passed around that cuts off the feet of these women. So I strongly recommend it. I think it's underrated. I don't think it necessarily like changes the wheel or anything, but I remember that used to be one, that was one of my very first horror films that I saw, and I remember just thinking, oh my goodness, this mixture of like dance and like very upfront gore, but also like this Korean sensibility. It has to do with like the breakdown of the nuclear family as well. And so that is my only input here, is that I if no one has seen the 2005 version of The Red Shoes from South Korea, I strongly recommend it. It's directed by Kim Young-young.
Yeah, when you told me that today, I was like reading up on it. It looks fantastic, and it's very clearly, I think, influenced by the original, the Hans Christian Andersen made that story famous, The Red Shoes, but very clearly. But there are better versions, you know.
Do you remember the last film with dance that you saw that you really liked?
I honestly, I rewatched The Red Shoes like 2 days ago. So that was great. I don't know. I feel like I haven't watched nearly enough dance movies, which is unfortunate. I've watched a couple. I know you mentioned Donnie Darko. I've been watching the second season of Dead to Me on Netflix, and there's her the one of the character's sons is in a like a Christian choral rock group who does like a lot. They do kind of the same like choreographed things. And it's very corny and hilarious and horrifying in its own way. They do Christian covers of pop songs. And like a, you know, they do sign sealed delivered and then replace all the words with like Jesus. And it is like horrifying in its own way. So I've been thinking about that a lot and those scenes a lot.
Yeah, I recently, every 420, I rewatch the 1954 version of A Star Is Born. And I don't think people realize like what, I mean, I know some people realize this, but I think as time passes, it's the legend is getting lost. But just seeing everything that Judy Garland goes through in that film, I'm like, I want to make a horror movie about her experience doing this because it's so fantastic. But when you think of the labor, back then, that she, you know, everything that she went through for that film, I'm like, there's a horror movie here somewhere. It's somewhere around here.
I was going to mention, so I'm going to look up the name of the person right now, but there was a, there is a musician who did a doc or a like a, an album dedicated to Moira Shearer in The Red Shoes.
Nice.
And
really?
Her decision to like what her career was like before doing this movie and after. Yeah. And I think it deals directly with the fact that like she was essentially stalked by Emmerich Pressburger.
Oh my God, that's awful.
Yeah, okay, maybe it's like a short. It's by Steve Exeter. But I know there is an album associated with it. So this is like a kind of a piece of real life horror attached to that movie. Yeah, and I don't know, what a horrifying, like she basically gave up her career to film this film and then was presumably, I mean, as far as I understand it, Emmerich Pressburger was like horrible to work for. So presumably was pushed like the Kubrick of his day, except he also just stalked actresses. So, you know, what a little horrifying piece of backstory to this.
No, yeah. And I mean, one thing that we haven't explicitly said for people that are listening that may not know when this film was released, it was released in 1948. And one thing that I will say, though, is that, I mean, not that films from, obviously not that films from the 40s were like necessarily budget or anything, but watching this film, it is so rich and it is so detailed. There's so many things in it, but keeping the year in mind, you know that technology and resources in and of themselves weren't even at the height as they were in the 50s and 60s in film industries and filmmaking circles. So you know that the labor to get these very fantastical, heavily choreographed, very creative, you know, shots and scenes had to have had a toll, and to know that, you know, it was also inflicted upon the jewel of the film, who's also abused in the fictional world. I mean, I was having this talk with someone the other day about how, like, especially being female spectators and loving films and researchers, it's always like sometimes I struggle with like knowing the line of content and endorsement. Obviously, I don't think if you film something it's necessarily that you endorse it, but you're putting someone through that process, through that labor, and you can call it acting, you could call it whatever, but you're still putting someone through that labor to a certain extent. I always feel like there's this very bizarre and weird line of responsibility that male creators especially don't extend towards female, you know, objects of study and display, right? It's like, oh, women are for exhibition and whatnot. And it definitely feels weird, especially when things are involved with dance, because it is kind of a really predatory culture in many, many ways. So yeah, it's complicated to say the least.
Definitely. I think with the Red Shoes in particular as well, everyone on screen, except for like two of the male actors, were also actual ballerinas. They like cast from actual ballets and ballet companies. And to me, that's, you know, their theory was, oh, we won't have to teach actresses to dance, so this is great. That's what they said to everyone. But to me, it's like, you're kind of picking people who are used to being worked to the bone to get, you know, exactly the shot you want, and they can do it over and over again. So I wonder how much, you know, physical abuse of their time and like these scenes were being taken as well. And I mean, the character in the film, Lubov, who is the teacher, he is a real life ballerina or ballet dancer, Leonidas Massini. And he is like abusing these girls throughout the entire film. He's like, if you think you're good enough, you're not. He says like horrible things to them. It brought to mind for me, I have several friends who are dancers, many of them still professionally dancers. One of them has, my friend Jaslyn Dowdy has, I think, two master's degrees. Nice. But like hearing their stories about auditions, and especially like dance school auditions, I know several people who were turned down from Juilliard with comments like, you know, at 17 years old, your thighs are too big. You know, like, you're an excellent dancer, but your thighs are just too big. It won't fit like the aesthetic of a ballerina. So no, or like you're, you know, I have friends who like their butts were too big, their breasts were too big. And these are like, you know, you can't really change that.
Right. Yeah.
So horrifying to like hear that constantly and then also be put on display in a production like this.
No, yeah. I really appreciate you choosing this theme for this episode, because as like, it's exciting to talk about like dance sequences and how it's incorporated with femininity. But I also think the very nature of dance relates to a real life horror, body horror, as you say, that is a bit under discussed in genre. And there could be a lot of creativity, especially if underrepresented filmmakers and creators are involved in collaboration processes to create something new, like when we were talking about what we hope to see. But for the fact of the matter, even as recent as 2018, you know, we see how men in the film industry and genre industries want to recapitulate these very feminine concepts in their personal vision, whatever that means. So really fascinating look into a bit of a niche. So I want to thank you so much for helping elucidate some things for me and for everyone else.
Yeah, of course. It was awesome to do this. And if I can just add on to that really quick too.
Please.
The idea of, especially in the new Suspiria, like, you know, men kind of pushing this. It's not even just men to me. I mean, Jallet, the choreographer, is obviously a dancer.
Yeah.
But the other two men in that production are not associated with dance at all. They were just kind of visually interested in it, it seemed like.
Yeah.
And even the inclusion of like that very French ballet background, or even it, honestly, I feel like the Suspiria film didn't have to be a ballet film, the new one.
It didn't.
It could have been like a dance, you know, any kind of dance film.
Yeah.
And I mentioned my friend Jaslyn Gowdy before, and she really deals with the ballet as like the traditional classical French ballet being taught as the beginning and kind of end of dance. Like, this is the basic, all the basics should be drawn from this, and really fighting that. And I feel like if those movies had had different perspectives, we could have explored why is that the basis, or like, why are you including this?
Totally.
So yeah, I'd like to see more films that deal with that too. Like other kinds of dance, because dance is this very rich field with so many different, you know, schools that did directly influence each other.
Yeah, I think of things like, something that just came to mind is the Panamanian film Diablo Rojo Party, which is just like ridiculous and amazing. And there's like this indigenous dance sequence that like calls up the gods in the middle of it. It's just very bizarre and very camp, but it's very creative and fun. And yeah, I can't agree more. Dance is camp, horror is camp. Let's have more dance and also more talks about dance culture and genre. I think it would be great.
I love, dance is camp. It's good. It's so good. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Josephine. I am so thrilled to have talked about this with you, and I hope that you come back and teach me more another day.
I would love to. Thanks so much for having me.